Hello, and welcome to The Good Robot Andes.
Hang on. It's a different... It's a different podcast tonight, listener.
It's different.
It's different. We're not talking about movies on this one. So that
means... What are we talking about, Andy?
Well, okay. I'm glad you asked, Andy. Tonight, we're talking about some tech, a tech subject. We're going to sort of break with programming. And that means that you're the expert.
And what are you?
I'm going to be hosting.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So good evening, listener.
Good evening.
Listeners, and you welcome to The Good Robot Andes, Season 2, Episode 6, Tech Podcast this evening. And this evening, I'm going to be asking Andy, what is the internet made of?
What is it made of?
What is it made of?
So, but what is it made of?
Yeah, so more, you know, it's sort of broad thing, what is it made of? But also, when you send an email, where does that go? How does it appear on someone's phone? When you go to a website, what's all that stuff on the website? How does it all work? So, what's the internet made of, Andy?
But what is it made of?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't... Okay, so I... probably I should have done some research, and I'd have some answers for you.
I'm glad that you you treat our users with our listeners with that much contempt, but please carry on.
I just wanted to lead with the amount of contempt I treat our listeners with.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things. I think we'll wander around quite a bit.
Yep.
But I want to get the point across. If you come away with nothing else out of this, I want you to come away with the understanding that what the internet is made of is computers. Now, you may be thinking, well, obviously, duh, the internet's made of computers. But specifically, the internet's made of computers just like your computer. And in fact, even if you've only got a tablet or a phone, that is actually a computer, and it's pretty much just like the computers that make the internet.
Okay.
So it's not magic. It's made out of computers, and most of those computers are connected together by wires.
Yes.
It's made of computers and wires.
Okay.
So, not a series of pipes.
and computers
connected to each other by wires. There is in fact a very, very thick wire that runs underneath the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
That takes most of the traffic. I should probably explain what traffic is, but we might get to that.
Okay.
But it's responsible for us being able to see the internet in America, Americans being able to see the internet.
That's a very common misconception about communications across the ocean. Communications across the oceans, in fact, is that, you know, a lot of people think that that goes via satellite, when in fact it doesn't.
You wouldn't want it to go over satellite because it would be slow.
It would be very slow. So, in fact, there's a massive cable underneath you. Is there more than one, or is there just one massive cable under the Atlantic Ocean?
I think they like to keep it to just one because then GCHQ have an easier job just tapping into it and listening to everything
of
you're
course,
doing.
Of course, yes. And at the other end, the NSA tap into the other end of it to listen to everything.
But when their courts stop them from listening into things, they can always just ask us.
Yes.
And we're allowed to listen to anything.
Yes.
I say we. I don't work for GCHQ. If I did, I'd probably guardedly.
When that nice man Edward Snowden said, everyone's spying on you.
And President everyone went, oh, come on, really? Is everyone spying on you?
And Obama said, yes, we are. Yep.
Yeah. It turns out.
Yeah, and just dropped the mic. Yep, we are.
Yep. So the other day, someone from the NSA referred to Edward Snowden's information as revelations.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they were.
They were revelations.
They weren't, for example, things he'd made up in his head. Which is what you may have said a little while ago.
Yes.
Anyway, we're off topic. Well, we're sort of on topic. Okay, so I mean, you should understand, especially with email.
Okay.
That everything you say in an email goes across the internet, which we'll talk about what it's made of. With nothing stopping people listening into it. And when we talk a bit more about what the internet's made of, you might understand a little bit more about who might be able to listen in and why.
Okay, so can you explain a bit more about that? Because let's say, in my Gmail in a browser, mm-hmm. or indeed on my telephone, mm-hmm. on my smartphone, I send an email using Gmail. And yes. I understood that uses some kind of encryption.
So
people can't snoop on it.
So with email specifically, unless you know you're using encryption,
mm-hmm.
you're not. And the vast majority of people are not.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit. Let's try and answer that thing of what happened. So there's a bit of a distinction between when you're in a web browser, which is something like Internet Explorer or Chrome or Firefox. So that's a web browser is a program that sits on your computer or your phone, which lets you look at web pages, mm-hmm. which are part of the internet.
Yeah.
And then if you use something like Gmail on a computer, you would be doing that inside your web browser.
Yes.
So Gmail is a website, and you'd be writing emails, either clicking a button on the website, and then they would get sent. But if you're on your phone in your email program, or indeed in your email program on your computer, like Outlook or something, it goes in a slightly different way. So let's talk about the stuff that's all the same between websites and email and everything else,
okay.
which is the internet, as I said, is made out of computers. And those computers are connected together by wires. And there are other bits, but it's mostly wires. And the way computers fundamentally can find each other. So the point is, when you send an email or you ask, I want to look at this website, that essentially what you're doing is saying, I want to look at the information that is on another computer somewhere.
Yes.
So you need a way of saying which computer. There are two. Go on.
Okay. So how does the internet know, just by you putting in a web address in, how does it know where to find that?
Yeah. So there's two layers to this, which we should talk about both of them. One of them is called IP.
Okay.
Which stands for Internet Protocol. Which is basically, if you ask the question, what is the internet made of? To some extent, what it's made of is IP. And what IP is a way of finding another computer on the internet. But it's not the way we're used to, where you type in the name.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way you may have seen, where there's four numbers with dots in between them.
Yes. So I think for most home users, if they've got a router at home, which most people have, that router's got an IP address. And it assigns
That's right.
your computer an IP address.
That's right, yeah. So every computer on the internet, and actually on any IP network, because there are others, and probably your home network isn't actually part of the internet, I'll try and explain that. But every computer on an IP network has this series of four numbers. Some of those series of four numbers are special. So the one that your router is probably on 192.168.something.
Yep.
So that if you ever had to type in those four numbers somewhere, it was probably those ones you had to type in. The reason for that is because 192.168 is a special bit of the internet, which means this isn't really on the internet. This is just the local stuff. This
so
is the stuff in my house.
Would you call that
office.
A private network?
I might call that a LAN.
A LAN.
I might call that
a local network. Area network.
A yes. local area network.
Okay.
But really, it's just most IP addresses are the same as each other, but there's a couple of special ones, and that's the one that you see most often. So basically, the computers in your house, if you've had to type that number in, that's how they know how to find the router. So and the way that works is that every computer on the network knows about the Internet Protocol, IP, so it basically passes on, if it knows it's got to find some stuff on some other computer, it knows the number of that computer, and it asks the computers it knows, please could you send this message to that computer? And then the computers it knows are the ones that are close to it. So your computer, for example, knows the IP address of your router.
Yep.
Or it's found it out automatically. These days, you probably didn't have to type it in. It just found it out. But it knows how to find your router. So what it'll do is it'll say to your router, please, can you send this message to this other computer? So, for example, if you wanted to go to a website like
The Good Robot Andy's
website.
Yes.
If you knew the number for the computer that has that website on, because, yes, it's just a computer connected by wires,
mm-hmm.
You could just type in the IP address of that computer. You can type it into your web browser. It does work. And what your computer will do is say to your router, please could you find this computer? And what your router knows how to do is go along the phone line or however you're connected to the internet and ask the next computer in the chain, which is owned by your internet service provider.
Okay.
Who are the people you pay your... You probably pay your line rental to them, but you definitely pay your internet cost, whatever you pay per month for internet. Those are your internet service provider. So your router asks that computer at the other end of the phone line, can you tell me how to get to this computer? Or can you send this message to this computer using the numbers? And eventually, that computer will either say, oh yeah, I know what's in that website because it's me. Or it'll say, all right, I know where to hand on that request to someone else. And this is, by the way, you may have heard the phrase that the internet could survive a nuclear bomb.
Yes, I have heard that.
What they mean by that is IP could survive a nuclear bomb. So what that means is if the computer at your ISP can't get a message through, it'll try again. It'll know several people it could ask. And if the message doesn't get through the first way, it'll try someone else and try someone else. So even if, you know, the whole of, you know, one half of the United States was wiped out, so some the computers you would normally go through to get to the Good Robot Andy's website weren't there anymore, well, you'd end up sending the message all the way around through, I was going to say China, but they probably wouldn't get through China.
No, probably not. They've got a firewall.
Somewhere else. go through somewhere else and come all the way back round again, and you wouldn't notice. It would be a bit slower. But the message would still get through. So that's what they mean when they say the internet would survive a nuclear
strike. I see. Okay. So
Basically, IP is a very clever thing.
I've just done a quick look about IP and the internet protocol. Mm-hmm. And it was first proposed in 1974, which is very interesting. Quite a few years before the concept of the internet.
Yeah, certainly before anyone had heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it was a way of constructing any network of computers that can just a way of them finding each other.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Not in a friendly way, because it's just numbers, but it's a way. So anyway, I said there were two layers.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are actually some other layers that I'm not going to talk about.
Okay. Is that because it's too complicated, or because you don't think that people need to know?
I don't think it's that interesting.
Okay, that's cool.
It's quite interesting to me, so mm-hmm. you can ask me about it if you like. But there's some layers, and then on a few more layers up. Obviously, there are layers below, by the way, which I'm much more woolly on, so we won't talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
A few layers up from that. By layers, I just mean each. When I say a layer's above another one, what I mean is it needs the ones below for it to be able to work.
Yeah, okay. So the IP stuff is the stuff that most people see and most people know about.
Well, you'll see the numbers, but you won't see them very often.
Yeah, okay, because most websites have a name.
Yes, so that's where we get to the next layer that I want to talk about.
Okay.
So the way you normally find a computer, well, actually, to be fair, the way you normally find a computer on the internet these days is you search for it in some way. So there's a box in the middle of your Internet Explorer window, you type in something, and it produces some search results.
Yes.
But if you allow your eyes to travel up from that box in the middle of your web browser,
mm-hmm.
at the top of the screen, at least on a home computer, and sometimes on a phone if you look carefully, you'll see there's a little bar at the top which is called the address bar.
Yes.
And that doesn't normally have IP numbers in it. It normally has a name in it.
Yeah, that's right.
And that name is the address of the website in something called the domain name system, or DNS.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So that is .com and all that stuff that you've heard of.
Ah, I see.
That's the name that you use as an address to talk about a website.
Yeah.
So actually underneath sometimes those numbers might change. You might, every time you go to the Google website, you might end up actually talking to a different IP address, possibly.
But you don't know that because DNS takes care of that.
Exactly. You don't notice because the names, you just use the names. And so all the name service has to do is take a name and tell you the number.
Yep.
So you don't see the number, but your computer just says, okay, I want to go to artificialworlds.net/goodrobotandys. What number computer is that on?
Yeah.
So I should stop there because I've just given an example that illustrates another point. So the number just tells you which computer you want to go to. So artificialworlds.net will give you back a number. But once you've got that number, the rest of that stuff that I said, the slash goodrobotandys bit, That's nothing to do with the IP address. That's a message that you're sending to the computer that has the website on it, saying this is the bit of your website I want.
Okay. I think that, yeah, we should probably stop there in terms of, not stop the whole podcast there, but we should probably stop there because we could go down a rabbit hole there. And maybe we could talk about how a website is constructed in a later podcast. Okay. But certainly in this case, we should... Okay, so what I will talk about is the fact that we were talking about IP addresses and DNS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that my ISP, my internet service provider, is called Plusnet.
Right.
And they don't provide, as standard, a static IP address.
Okay.
And what a static IP address is one on my router that doesn't change for the outside world.
Yes.
So we didn't talk. Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. No, anyway, so what I'm going to say is that I use a third-party provider, another company, to give me a DNS name that is assigned to my router.
Exactly. And then
that changes when the IP address changes. So the thing you were talking about where you put in the address, the name of the website, like Google, the IP address could change, but it doesn't matter because DNS takes care of that.
That's exactly right. So that's a good example. It's actually exactly the same way it works for some public website. You want a name and you don't want to have to care about the number. So the numbers won't change very often normally, but for someone like you who's on an internet provider that doesn't give them a number that's unchanging, the number actually does change quite often, but yes. It doesn't bother you because you just use the name instead. So the way that the domain name system works is a little bit interesting. It wouldn't survive a nuclear strike. So the internet's not quite as clever as people say, because that's actually a centralized system. And there's a kind of single source of the truth somewhere.
Is that public knowledge where the DNS servers are in the world?
Yeah, there's somewhere in America. And until not that long ago, I think the central place was all in one location.
Right.
So if you'd actually just blown it
which
up,
which is quite risky,
eventually would have made the internet fall over.
It's quite risky. I mean, you don't even need to blow stuff up. You could use an EMP, which is a electromagnetic pulse, which I'm sure, you know, sort of sci-fi and action movie fans are familiar with what they are, but they basically fry electrical circuits.
Yeah, or you could just pull the plug out.
You could just pull the plug on the internet.
So I think they've now got more sites for it now, I think. But yeah, so the way that works is when you start up, you've only got the numbers, you've got no names. So if you've got a name you want to know where it is, like artificialworlds.net, you need to ask someone. So you actually need to know the IP address of someone you can ask. So what happens is you ask your router, because you know the IP address of your router, and your router knows who to ask. So what will happen is your router will either already know the answer because it looked it up not that long ago, in which case it will tell you immediately, or it will go to the next step along the chain and say, I know that you know about domain names, so please could you tell me the IP address and so on. And at each step in the chain, the person might say, well, I already know the answer, so I'm just going to give it straight back to you. Or if not, they'll pass it on to the next person. And the point is, eventually, all this passing on to the next person that goes on ends up in this one central location somewhere in America.
Yes.
Which is why I say it's not... it wouldn't survive a nuclear strike, or the right kind of nuclear strike. I mean, it wouldn't be that bad, because if that stuff disappeared, all the computers that have got stuff remembered would keep remembering it for a while. So you'd still be able to find stuff for a while. And in the meantime, someone would set up another central thing and it would be okay.
Yeah.
So that works. It works surprisingly well because so many steps along the chain remember the answer.
Which is why when you do a search for something, or when you look up a website, the answer comes back very quickly.
That's right. And specifically looking at that name, if you go to a website that no one in your town has ever looked at in the last month, you will notice a long delay before it even starts loading. And that's because it's actually going off to someone somewhere much further away to say, what is the IP address for this domain name?
Yeah.
Once you've done that once, your ISP will hold on to it for a while.
And is that called caching?
And that is indeed called caching.
Okay, and I think people might be familiar with that in terms of on a computer, You have a cache in your memory. You have a cache on your hard disk frequently. And what that is a place where, as far as I understand it, is a place where stuff that gets looked up frequently can be held for a period of time. And then it gets recycled, doesn't it, I think?
Yeah, exactly. And that same idea applies for very small amounts of memory that are very, very fast. So inside the CPU on your computer, there'll be a cache that's used to be able to access information even faster than you can access it in the memory of your computer.
Yes.
And then right down to stuff that's really slow, like going and finding the IP address for a domain name that's half the world away. The same idea of a cache is used in all those layers and many more in between.
Okay. That's excellent.
They're a good way of just remembering stuff. The interesting thing about them is if that stuff changes, knowing how long to keep hold of the information so that you get fast information but not necessarily accurate is a really hard problem.
Yes.
So the DNS system, actually, every piece of information it holds, it also holds with it how long that information lasts.
Right, okay. So it has a predetermined time that's set by somebody somewhere to say that we'll hold this for, I don't know, 24 hours, 2 weeks, whatever.
And it's the person who says how long you should hold it for is the person who's kind of the authoritative source.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in your case where your IP address is changing often, then that DNS entry will basically say, don't ever hold on to this. Always come back and ask me, because at any time it might have changed.
Yes.
So that's why actually going to that domain name for you is going to be relatively slow.
Yes.
Because it has to go and look it up every time.
Yeah. No, it is definitely slow. Yeah. It takes a while to load it up. Okay, so...
So in summary, it's just a load of computers connected together by wires.
That's fantastic. That's what the internet's made of. So these are connected together using Ethernet cables, which is what people used to use before Wi-Fi came along and drove them all crazy.
Well, not really. So in the real internet, it's not connected by cables that we'd be familiar with.
Oh, okay. So it's connected by really fast data cables.
Yeah, I mean, for example, the cable that goes under the sea between the US and Europe is a fiber optic cable.
Okay.
Which it basically means light is carrying the information instead of electricity.
So the information moves at the speed of light.
It bounces off the edges of the wire, so it's not actually the speed of light, but it's way faster than
Ethernet.
Electricity.
Yeah. Way faster electricity... than... Sorry, go.
Electricity is a lot slower than light.
Interesting.
Even though electrons move at almost the speed of light.
Yes.
But electricity moves by electrons bumping into atoms and knocking other electrons.
Of course,
along.
There's a lot of movement in there, isn't there? So that's going to slow it all down.
It's considerably slower than an electron would move if it was just moving on its own.
Yes. Okay, so we were talking about encryption earlier on, and email.
Right.
And we were talking about... Yeah. Yes, so you were saying that if you write it... Say if I write you an email in Gmail.
Yeah. Yes.
Other people can see that.
Well, yeah. So if you look in the corner of your screen, right next to the address bar...
Yes.
...in your web browser, if it's a kind of home computer web browser, there's probably a little padlock in the corner.
Yep.
Talking to someone, when you're on a website, something like Google or a shopping website or something like that, there'll often be a green padlock in the corner, and that feels very nice. You should definitely pay attention to that. What that padlock means is that no one can listen in to the conversation between you and that website.
Right, okay.
I mean, I should qualify that slightly. No one can listen in unless there are any bugs in any of the software at either end.
And there have been... some defects to do with what you're talking about there is SSL, is that right?
That's correct.
Which is secure socket.
You might also hear it referred to as HTTPS, which just means the secure version of HTTP, which is the way you talk to a website.
Which is SSL, which is secure sockets.
SSL,
layer.
That's right. The new version is called TLS, which is which stands for Transport Layer Security.
Okay.
So the best encryption we have for talking to websites is TLS, which is kind of the next version of SSL, let's say.
Okay, so let's say I'm writing an email using Gmail to you.
Yes.
And right, in my browser, it says HTTPS. Does that mean that email is encrypted?
No. So what it means is the communication between you and that website,
yes,
is private.
Yeah.
But then if you're using Gmail to send your email, once it leaves Gmail and goes over the email system,
yeah,
it's not encrypted anymore. So the email system uses something called SMTP, Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. Yes. You can tell almost every protocol
has,
which is a way of speaking,
yeah,
has the word simple in its name.
Yes.
Not HTTP, but a lot of them do. Anyway, so SMTP was designed very, very early in the history of the internet. In fact, it may even have come along before the internet existed. And it certainly came along before anyone really cared whether anyone was reading their email. Because the only people who could read it were people, you know, sitting on the computer next to you. And
yes,
that's who you were sending it to anyway. So no one thought about it. And unfortunately, people have tried to make it more secure, but we're basically stuck with it as it is. So once the email leaves Gmail, it gets sent to another computer. So you can tell which computer it's getting sent to by the email address. So if your email address is andy@goodrobotandys.com,
mm-hmm,
then the goodrobotandys.com bit is the computer it's being sent to. So it actually uses the same mechanism we've already talked about. It uses IP, and it uses DNS on top of IP,
yeah,
to go and find which computer to send it to. But instead of sending it the way you open a web page, which is over HTTP, it sends it over SMTP.
Yes.
And it will... I don't... sometime we should get into ports, but I think probably, again, that should be... We should do another podcast about that.
Yeah.
It sends it on a different port, which you can think of as being like a plug.
Yeah.
It's not really, but it's like a different plug on that computer that you plug into. So it gets sent over SMTP, and SMTP is completely insecure. So SMTP bounces around all those computers we talked about before about IP,
mm-hmm,
goes from computer to computer over IP until eventually it finds the one it's supposed to go to. And every single computer on the way can read your email if it wants to and inject extra information in there that you didn't put there or anything else it wants to do. And because of the way IP works, you have no idea which computers it might end up going through and which of those you can trust.
Right.
By the way, most of those computers, it's interesting to think, well, why? Who pays for this? Why are they there? You know, you can understand, like, I pay my ISP to have a computer where it has one. And then if I'm sending an email to you, well, you pay your ISP to have a computer at the other end that it goes to. But what's all the stuff in the middle?
Yeah, it's a good point. Who does pay for that and who owns them?
Yeah, well, it's a bit weird.
Okay. Maybe we should... Is that something for a future podcast, do you think?
I'd have to research it. Okay. It's a bit of a mystery to me.
Let's do that in a future one.
Let's leave it, yeah. So just a bit, just so as not to leave you entirely hanging.
Okay.
It's largely paid for by universities and governments.
I see. Governments.
Yeah.
That's worrying. So,
but we like governments.
Where I'm going with this is that I've been following the US presidential campaign.
Yes.
And you probably know where I'm going with this, but Hillary Clinton has been criticized, although it does seem to have died down now a bit now, but she's been quite heavily criticized in the past for having an encrypted email server.
Yeah.
And I presume that means that she was able to send and receive email that nobody else could see. Is that right? Okay. Or is it? Do you think that's the case?
So was it... See, did she have an encrypted email server?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, we can talk... Let's talk a little bit about how you might do that. I think it's ironic that she was criticised for using an email server.
Well, I do as well.
She's so open to criticism, for example...
Given all that you just told me... I think that she's being incredibly diligent in doing this.
Yeah. So. It's just, she's so open to criticism about, for example, for not being a complete racist.
Yes, quite. Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah. And not being orange.
Yeah. So if... yeah. like all the best politicians.
Yes.
So if she was using a service which was genuinely encrypted all the way through,
mm-hmm.
she must have been only speaking to other people,
yes,
who also had encryption in their bit. So if you really make an effort, you can send encrypted emails. You can also send emails which have information in them, which means you know they haven't been messed about with. So you know the person who sent them really did send that. And I think if we're going to talk about how encryption works, we need another 20 podcasts for that.
Okay, yes,
but
we do.
You can have email or something that's like email between people that's encrypted. But both ends need to know about that. And if you were using it, you would know you were. There's different ways of doing it, but it's hard because any time you want to interface with the rest of the world, suddenly your encryption disappears.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's
why it's never really taken off very well.
I won't go on too much. Actually, I tell you what, I'm going to park the subject of encryption because it's something I want to talk about in a future podcast.
Yeah, we should do. Yeah, I mean, I would have to research it, but we should definitely do a podcast about how encryption works.
So we've covered how computers talk to each other. And we've covered IP addresses and DNS. We've touched on email and why it's not secure.
Mm-hmm.
So we've also got things like Netflix and Amazon Prime. Mm. I think we could probably do a whole podcast on video streaming, to be honest, and how interesting that is and how it works.
Yeah, there's caching involved.
There is a lot of caching involved there, yes. So is there anything else for our listeners? Do you think we could touch on there, or do you think that's a little potted?
Can I finish? I just do a little bit more on the rant about how it's just computers connected by wires.
Yes, please do.
The other thing I'd like to say to you is that it genuinely is computers like yours, and if you want to have a website on your computer in your house, you totally can, right? So you can download for free without paying any money a program, for example, Apache HTTPD, which is a web server, and you can run that on your computer, on your Windows computer, on your Linux computer, on your Macintosh computer. If you're crazy enough to have one of them.
Well, I do, actually, yeah.
You can run that program, and if you do the right stuff with DNS, it can even have an address. You can pay for a domain name, have it point at your computer at home. Now, it won't be the most reliable website in the world if it's running on your computer at home.
Because you've got to reboot it and that kind of thing.
Exactly, and also because... Yep, and your IP might change.
Yes.
And... your computer might slow down sometimes, and all kinds of things. But the fact is, it's not magic. It doesn't exist in some world outside of what ordinary humans can do. It's totally open to you to have a website that runs on your computer, and indeed to have an email server that runs on your computer, as I do.
As you do.
As I do.
But not encrypted.
No, not encrypted, so you can read it all. It's not magic. It's just a computer program running on a computer connected together by wires.
Excellent. That is a very, very informative little podcast there.
That's what the internet is made of.
And we touched on a whole bunch of other stuff. We touched on some stuff that I'd like to talk about in future. And that would be most excellent. So, yeah, there we go. Awesome. Do some plugging.
Yeah, and a lot of the software that makes the internet is open source or free software.
Yes, yes it is, that's right. So actually, before we stop talking about this, would you say that so you said that the computers that run the internet are a lot like, say, if you've got a home computer, so they're just...
Yeah.
They're running probably an Intel processor with some memory, and they've got
often
hard drives...
They're big versions. Yeah, they're big versions of the same stuff you would buy in PC World.
Okay, and where was I going with this little chat? So yes, they're a lot like the computers that you have at home. No, it's gone. I had a specific question there.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, I'll continue the thread I was following to get towards plugging.
Go.
So, and then you can, if you think of it.
I've got it. So,
okay, hit it.
So they're running stuff that you could buy in the shops, basically, yeah. Kind of.
Yeah.
And what kind of operating system do you think they're running? Are they mostly running Linux?
Yeah. So yes. The vast majority of the computers that make up the internet, you know, those computers we were talking about that pass the messages on via IP, all the information about a web page that you're visiting or an email you're sending, it goes through all these computers. The vast majority of those computers are running either Linux or one of the other operating systems that you might not have heard of that are like Linux. They have the same style of commands that you type into them, stuff like
okay.
that, which are called FreeBSD, OpenBSD, and NetBSD. So they'll be running, almost all of them will be running that, apart from a few corners where there might be some Microsoft machines. Now, we haven't really talked about what Linux is.
No, I think that's
maybe that's another podcast.
That's a future podcast. What is Linux is a future podcast.
But suffice it to say that Linux is a thing like Windows that basically lets you have other programs running on your computer.
Yes.
An operating system is what it's called.
Okay.
And you can use it at home, and we should definitely do a podcast about that. And it's also what you get on the Raspberry Pi. If you buy a Raspberry Pi, which we should definitely do a podcast
yes.
about.
What is a Raspberry Pi? Can you eat it?
Can you eat it, and what is it?
Yes.
That will have Linux on it. So if you've used a Raspberry Pi, you've probably used Linux. So you can have Linux at home, but it's also the thing that runs a lot of the internet, or its family, which includes the BSDs as well.
Okay.
Anyway, so free software is what I like doing for fun. So free software is basically software that you can download and change and play about with yourself. So I write some free software for fun, and I make videos about some of the free software that I write and about programming languages that I've learned about and things like that. One of the pieces of free software which you should pay for is, because it's not necessarily free in that sense, although you can download it for free from my website as well, is a game called Rabbit Escape. It's on the Android
yes.
store.
Rabbit Escape, listener.
Rabbit Escape. It has cost 60p.
Buy it. It's a bargain.
Yeah.
Why haven't you bought it already?
Yeah. Well, I think probably our listener has. It's just that they should tell their friend.
Tell your friends. Tell all your friends.
Yeah. But as we discussed, don't lose.
I do that.
Don't lose that one
I think
friend.
I do that on every podcast, actually.
What, tell your friend?
Yeah, it's a line from the Tim Burton, the first Batman movie.
Ah.
He says, tell your friends, tell all your friends. And he says, what are you? And he says, I'm Batman.
Yeah, don't tell them that.
No.
Just tell them buy Rabbit Escape.
Yes, tell them about Rabbit Escape.
And also, just look at the About page for the Good Robot Andes. There are links to a load of YouTube videos about programming. At the moment, I'm doing a series called How to Write a Programming Language.
Ooh.
You can write
awesome.
Your own programming language.
See, now that's another future podcast as well, in that...
It's not as hard as it sounds.
In that it would be interesting. I think people are interested in what the stuff that they're using is written in. How do people write Chrome? So, you know,
what is computer programming?
Yeah, exactly. What is programming? Yeah. So how do you do it? And how does it all hang together and that kind of thing?
Well, programming is like the best thing that's ever been invented by humans.
I think that's wrong, but...
It's the best thing.
It's not.
This is really good, honestly.
No, it is good. It is good.
Yeah,
it is good. Okay.
Yeah.
Shall I plug? I'm going to plug. I present a radio show on Glastonbury FM 107.1. You look it up on the internet. They have a website. They have web streaming, so you can listen online. I present a radio show on Thursdays between 6 and 7, repeated on Fridays between 2 and 3. It's a movie.
And it reaches all the way down the street past the Wells.
Yes, past the Wells. Yep, it does. In fact, actually, they've got a new antenna, so it reaches a bit further now.
Cool. How far does it reach to around the corner?
Yeah, just around the corner. Yeah, it's a bit better. So that's a movie review, no spoilers movie review, music. I also look at movies that are on TV in the weekend following the show. I look at what's on at the local cinemas. Occasionally have a live guest.
That's really cool.
It's cool. So that's that. There are podcast highlights of... Excuse me. There are podcast highlights of that. Movie Mashup is the name of the podcast. There are also highlights on YouTube. Search for Andy's Movie Mashup. Yes, that's new. That's a new thing.
New. There's been a lot of YouTube. I've seen a lot of YouTube coming from,
so there's,
from your Twitter.
Andy's Movie Mashup is the name of the channel. There's about
there's a Facebook page.
Yeah, there's a Facebook page called Andy's Movie Mashup. I'm also on Twitter at @ConquerCockers_97. There we go.
You can find that all the links are on our about page. If you Google for Good Robot Andy's, click on the website and click on about.
That's it.
Then a page will be delivered to your web browser over HTTP.
Yeah.
And now, on it will be information.
And we love feedback. We love correspondence. So,
for example, why have you done this podcast about technology? I thought it was a movie podcast.
This is rubbish. When are you going to talk about a film? So we'd like some feedback about this podcast, about other podcasts, about, well, not other people's podcasts, about other episodes.
At this point, I wouldn't mind feedback about other people's podcasts.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you could tell us how other people's stuff is better than ours.
Yeah, it's got music.
It's got music and stuff. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, let us know what technology topics confuse you, or actually, probably more realistically, which aspects of what we were supposed to be talking about tonight we completely messed up and didn't tell you.
That would be interesting.
didn't explain at all.
Yeah.
And we'll try and do it again better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's it.
I think that's it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, let us know if you enjoyed it. Yeah. Cheers.
Bye.